Prepare to be astonished!
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Good evening and welcome back to an adventure in history. We are into...
Almost into April.
I don't even know what month is it. Still March.
We're in this. See, do you don't
spring
get,
break.
You don't get the craziness of spring break like I do. You just enjoy spring break and
do things with your family. Yes,
we get the waves and waves and waves of tourists,
which is lovely.
It is actually, you know, I really do like that they used to when I first got here, all the spring breaks in the area were on the same week.
Okay,
and it was really crowded, and I like that they've kind of spread out now. Like Washington does it a week after, and sometimes some of the Oregon ones aren't all the same week either. So it makes it a little easier.
I'm sure they did that just for you.
Well, I did request it. I wrote to every single superintendent in three states. No, I did not.
So we have a very honorable guest here tonight, and I'm so excited that we booked her a couple months ago now. But we have Senior Judge Paula Brownhill with us.
Yay.
Hello.
I'm very excited by
this. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Yeah, we waited until she semi-retired. Is that even the correct term?
Well, I'm retired.
You are retired.
Yes.
But still working.
Yes.
As a judge.
Yes.
We're gonna get into that.
Okay.
Before we even get to that, and before we get rid of the silliness of this day in history,
yes.
I do have to say, my daughter's Girl Scout troop took a trip to your courthouse.
Oh.
It has to be 15 years ago now. And you were so inspiring to those little girls.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. I don't know if any of them have gone into law or have become a judge, but they all just were very wowed. And you took them backstage, so to speak. And just they were all very charmed.
I love that. And it's so good for girls to see that.
Yes.
And to see a woman in a position of power. So.
Yes. And when I retired, there were three women.
I love that, right? Out of how many? I mean, how many circuit judges do we have?
Three.
So it was all three.
Three.
Okay.
Yes.
And is there any other?
No.
Okay.
No, there was no other court like that. And it's not like that now. Now there are two men and a woman. But,
okay.
Yeah.
But that's still remarkable, and I'm glad that it was here.
I am too.
Instead of Wisconsin or
or elsewhere in Oregon, right? Yeah.
All right, because this is going to be a great show. Let's do the this day in histories. These are things tomorrow, March 27th. Again, they're things to win trivia with, or if you're having trouble figuring out how to start a conversation.
Right.
Maybe one of these would work.
Or if you go to Max Rotary Club.
Maybe.
Which we discovered.
Yeah. Only every other week. I'm only Sergeant Arms every other week.
Okay.
All right, so 1513.
Oh, wow.
I know. I don't usually go back. But Spaniard Juan Ponce de Leon and his expedition first sight Florida. I think they were looking for Disney World. Probably not. 1790. The modern shoelace with an aglet is patented in England by Harvey Kennedy. 1790. This caught me off guard.
Right.
If you'd said modern shoelaces, I would have guessed like 1930, 1920.
Right, but okay.
Very surprising.
And patented.
Patented.
Okay.
1866, American Andrew Rankin patents the urinal. Sorry.
of course.
She always makes me feel badly for bringing things up that she doesn't like.
Just gave him the look.
1884, the first long-distance telephone call.
Oh. Okay.
1884, between Boston and New York. I wonder what it cost.
Or what did they say? Does it say what they said?
Oh, it doesn't even say who they were talking to.
Okay.
But it did, like, it made me think of my kids and the idea of, long distance calls costing something is a totally foreign idea.
Using home phones, even.
Well, that too. 1912. I like this one a lot. Japanese cherry trees are planted along the Potomac.
I saw that. I love it. And they're coming out here, too. I mean, some are in full bloom.
I like the cherry trees. They're very pretty. 1939, March Madness crowns its first men's NAIA champion. And do you know what the game was?
I do, only because I had seen it too. So go ahead.
University of Oregon defeats Ohio State University 46-33.
Yay!
March Madness.
Tall furs.
And we won it. 1980, Mount St. Helens. 1964, earthquake rocks Alaska with a 9.2. 1973, we just had the Oscars a few weeks ago. Yeah. Marlon Brando declines his Best Actor Oscar for The Godfather. Sends Sachin Littlefeather to protest.
Yep.
1998, I'm sorry, FDA approves Viagra. But the thing I think had the most impact on history on this day, 1958, Khrushchev becomes the Soviet premier.
Oh.
Speaking of shoelaces. I like when he bangs the shoe on the... That makes me laugh.
That was good. Yeah, so, that was quite a list today.
Did I miss anything?
No, you didn't. You know, I lived on Ponce de Leon Street in South Florida. I did. Although I think there's probably 1,000 of them.
Probably.
I mean, they're all over South Florida and North Florida too. So, yeah.
And you didn't say today's Pi Day, but it is.
Oh my goodness.
Pi Day. Pi.
3.14.
Our former bookkeeper, that's her favorite day of the year.
Of course.
Because she was a numbers person.
Yeah. Well, we have a numbers person and a people person and sort of an all-around person in our presence today. So let's start with how are you from the area? How did you end up here?
Well, I did start here many, many years ago. So when my dad graduated from law school in 1950, he and my mom came to Astoria so he could apply for a job with Frank Spittle, who was an attorney here and had grown up with my grandfather in Dudley, England. So my dad thought he had an inn here. So they came, and it was a beautiful weekend and sun shining, warm. And he interviewed with Mr. Spittle and said, I'd like this job. And Mr. Spittle said, all right, I'll hire you for $200 a month. So my dad said, well, you know, I have a job offer in Madras for $250 a month. And Mr. Spittle said, well, I'm not going to quibble over $50. So my dad said, great, I'll take the job. And he did. And when he got his first paycheck, it was for $200.
I was wondering if that's where that was going.
That's where that went. And so he said, he learned a good lesson that you don't rely on ambiguity when it involves your livelihood.
Right.
And then it rained for the next 9 months. But
of course.
They bought a house here on Kensington, and that's where I grew up until halfway through third grade.
Okay.
And then he took a position with a business law firm in Eugene, and we moved to Eugene.
Oh. So
in the third grade?
Third grade.
So how were you feeling about that move? I mean, you obviously had some friends.
I had friends. We had a great life here. I mean, it was a really nice place to grow up. We had the whole neighborhood would play games together. We'd walk to school together. We were really active in the Episcopal Church here, and my parents had bridge clubs and parties, and I did not want to move, but I had no choice. It was an easier transition for me in third grade than it was for my sister, who was in fifth grade.
Right.
She never really recovered. But and then in 1983... I moved back with my husband, and we've been here ever since.
Oh, I love that. And so moving to Eugene, is that why you, because you went to University of Oregon?
I did.
For undergrad and for law school?
Yes.
So did you apply anywhere else, or did you just know? Because at that point, you were living there, and that was your home.
Yes. Well, after law school, I moved to Coos Bay, because Blair lived in Coos Bay, and we got married. And then his dad died in 1980. I was still in law school then. But his mom was alone here and living in a big house. And he just thought it would be a good idea if we came back and kept her company. And so we did.
So where did your dad go to law school? And was that any kind of an influence both on where you decided to go to law school? And why did you decide to go to law school?
Well, I graduated from high school wanting to be a clinical psychologist.
Oh,
I had no interest in the law at all. And then my senior year of college, I met with my psychology professor and told him what I wanted to do. And he said, well, you should think long and hard about that because, you know, if you want to get married and have kids, that's really the path that most women take. So I thought, well, I'll take a year off and think about it. Not that I wanted to get married and have kids, but maybe this isn't the field for me. So I went to work as a police dispatcher for the Oregon State Police and loved that job, but it didn't pay very well. So then I transferred over to the Lane County Sheriff's Office, and I worked there for 4 years, I think, and I just loved it. But a friend of mine from high school applied to law school and was accepted. And I realized if he can get in, I can get in. So that's why I went to law school.
And were your parents supportive of that?
Very supportive of that, yes. And my dad was willing to pay for University of Oregon Law School, but not a private law school someplace. So that influenced my decision.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah.
So just talk a little bit about, was there any, when you're being told advice by a college professor that, well, you're obviously going to get married and have children, discuss like that in law school. Did you guys see that same sexism? How was it? I mean, was it, why would a woman want to be a lawyer? Were they supportive?
By the time I went to law school, there was a lot of support for women.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. There were still a lot more men in the law school than there were women, but... Many more in my class, many more women in my class than in my dad's.
For sure, right? Yeah. And was your dad, did he end up being a judge as well, or did he stay as an attorney?
He stayed as an attorney, but when he worked for Frank Spittle for 2 years, or a year and a half, and then Garnet Green was the district attorney here, and he appointed my dad as his deputy. And after 1 year, Garnet decided to retire, so my dad ran for district attorney and was elected. And he served here for 7 years, 7 or 8 years. He was 30 years old when he was elected.
Oh, my goodness. That seems so young.
Like a baby.
Yeah.
Baby DA.
He loved that job. And he worked really closely with the sheriff and the Oregon State Police. And one of his very best friends was Ted Bugis, who was in the FBI in those days. So they did a lot of work together. They did a lot of drinking together too, I think, but they did work together really closely. And then he transferred to a business firm, but he was the litigator because he had so much trial experience from Clatsop County.
Wow. So you also mentioned, so give us the timeline too. So where did you meet Blair? Did you know him here or did you meet him in Eugene?
I went to kindergarten with Blair at the YMCA.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Well, it's a little misleading.
And you still married him.
I still married him. Yes. He went to kindergarten for 3 years.
Oh.
His mother sent him when he was three to the Episcopal kindergarten. Then when he was four, he went to the Y with me. And then when he was five, he went to the Y with his own class. But I think she just had to get him out of the house.
Oh, funny.
I love these.
That says a lot. Yes. So did you guys then stay friends? How did that relationship, I mean, because you moved.
Yes, I moved and he had no idea who I was. But when I was in law school, I was working in the DA's office in Eugene. And every Friday night, most of the attorneys would go across the street to a bar called Ron and Maddie's Caravel and have a few drinks before going home. So I was there one night with the attorneys from the DA's office. Blair had come up to visit his friend. He was in Coos Bay. And his best friend was working in the DA's office. So he came over to Ron and Maddie's and sat down across from me at the table and said, "Hi, I'm Blair Henningsgaard." And I said, "I know. I went to kindergarten with you."
Oh.
Which he was surprised because he had no idea who I was. But he was kind of a standout in the kindergarten. One of those kids that
he left an impact.
He did. Yes. So, of course, I remembered him. So, and we've been together ever since.
I love that.
Oh, I love that. That's a great story. And what year was that?
1979.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah.
So, when you started your law career, what kind of law did you think you were interested in? What did you think you were going to do?
Well, I really wanted to work as a prosecutor. Because of my background with the law enforcement, that was the side that really interested me. Unfortunately, there weren't a lot of openings in Coos Bay, so I applied for a job in the DA's office, and the DA at that time, Paul Burgett, said he just didn't think I was aggressive enough to be a prosecutor, which I don't really blame him because he hired Glenn Faber, who was in my law school class, and Glenn was very, he was a great lawyer and very aggressive. So if you compare the two of us, I could see why Paul made that decision. Mm-hmm. So I became a public defender, which was just the opposite of what I wanted to do, but gave me really good experience. So then I had kind of both sides of the criminal law, and I think it really helped me later.
What was your takeaway from that? I mean, did you still enjoy doing it, especially since it was something that you hadn't visualized yourself doing?
Sometimes I enjoyed it. I didn't really enjoy representing people I knew were guilty.
Mm-hmm.
It could be really difficult.
Sure.
And Coos County in that time, in the early 80s, was really depressed. Mm. The mill had closed. People were struggling. It wasn't a happy place. So we were really pleased to move to Astoria.
And when you moved, what was your transition then at that point?
Well, we went into practice together. Blair did a lot of business law, probate. I did family law, juvenile law. And we started prosecuting in municipal court because Bob Anderson was the city attorney, and he asked us to do the prosecutions. And that was really fun. That was what I wanted to do all along.
So you did get some of it then.
I did, yes.
Oh, interesting.
And what kinds of things were you prosecuting there for people that don't know what that court is?
Misdemeanors. So driving under the influence of intoxicants, theft, criminal mischief, disorderly conducts, all kinds of misdemeanors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was great fun.
Was there ever any, and this is probably an inappropriate question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Was there any satisfaction with this guy's bad, I'm just glad that I put him away or that I got him convicted? I mean, is it just I'm always professional?
Well, somewhere in between. I wasn't ever really thrilled to put away somebody because they were bad, because most of the people in municipal court had just made a mistake or had too much to drink. So there wasn't a lot of satisfaction in that part of it. But it was really fun to work with the police officers. Mm. We did some trainings with them, and that was enjoyable.
So then tell us about your transition into being a judge, because that's quite a change.
It was a big change, yes. So I became municipal court judge first in March of 1994. And then in November of 1994, Barbara Roberts, who was then governor, appointed me to the circuit court. And in those days, Judge Edison had been the circuit court judge for, I think, 28 years, but he'd been out on disability for several months. And so we were really backed up. There was only one circuit court judge, and Shirley Tinner had been the trial court clerk. She worked for Judge Edison forever. I love Shirley. Mm-hmm. But she had the docket in a book that she wrote by hand. Judge Edison had a computer, but he had never turned it on.
Oh, my God.
So I came in, and it was like, wow, let's bring circuit court into the new century here. So it was a challenge, but it's the best job I've ever had. It was really a good job. So we hired a trial court administrator, the first one Clatsop County had ever had. And that's kind of like a manager, a business manager for the court. And we had the same staff that Judge Edison had had for years and years. I got the beautiful courtroom.
Yeah, how did that happen? Because you did have the best courtroom of all of them.
I did, because it was the circuit court courtroom, and I was appointed as the circuit court judge. So I got the room. And then we worked with Michael Foster to choose a color palette, because the walls in there had been lime green.
Oh, awful.
It was awful. But he chose Wedgwood blue with antique white trim. It was beautiful when he was done. And then I did my judge project. I with Lisa Penner's help, and she was really helpful, we researched all the judges who had sat in that courtroom and then the territorial judges before them and did biographies, and they're on the walls of the courtroom now.
Oh, interesting.
It was really a fun project, and I learned a lot about judicial history here. But I'm really grateful to Lisa for all of her help with that.
Oh, how amazing. I love that. And were you the first woman then elected to that position in Clatsop County?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's quite something, too. So in a room surrounded by a history that's narrated by men, what is it like, or what was it like sitting there and knowing you were creating the next history?
Well, I'll give you an example. I was presiding over a civil jury trial early on, probably in 1994, at the end of 1994, and one of the lawyers, who was from Portland, was making an argument to the jurors, and he was saying, you know, I don't want to be here. I know you don't want to be here. The other lawyer doesn't want to be here. The judge doesn't want to be here. And I wanted to raise my hand and say, wait a minute. I don't want to be anywhere but here. This is the best place I could possibly be. I mean, it was just so exciting to be in that position.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that way the whole 25 years I sat there.
Yeah. So 25 years later, you retire.
Yeah.
But you're, like we said earlier, you're still working.
Yeah.
So where does your work take you now?
Well, it can take me all around the state. I have to work 35 days a year for 5 years.
Okay.
And I'm on my fourth year. But I've done a lot of remote work because of COVID.
Mm. Oh, interesting.
So they set my computer up in my breakfast room at home so I can link into the OJD system, and I can get all the files on my little computer, and I can see the lawyers and courtroom clerks all around the state. So I've done a lot of that. I've done now here, Union, Coos County. I've gone to Washington County, to Yamhill, to Polk. I go to Clatsop a lot. And I love going to Clatsop.
And what are you filling in for? Is it sick days, vacations? What constitutes a fill-in, the need for a fill-in?
Sick days, vacations.
Okay, all those things.
Yes. Meetings.
Talk a little bit about... What is better, or what are the pros and cons of being a judge someplace where you know everybody, like Clatsop County, versus you're brought into some community that you don't know probably anybody?
Well, that's why I like Clatsop so much, because not only do I know the people and love the people, but I know their procedures. I know what a pretrial conference is. When I go to other courts, they have many different procedures, and I quite often don't have any idea who the people are, what their names are. And they're used to their judges doing things a certain way, and I don't necessarily do them that way. So it can be really awkward and uncomfortable. But it also, there's a certain amount of freedom there, not knowing anyone.
Right.
Yeah.
Anonymity.
Right? Yes.
You could just leave at the end of the day.
That's right.
So explain what a procedure is then. Because I envision everything being very formal and exact and very similar, but it sounds like it's not. So what is different?
Well, for example, arraignments can be different in one court to another. Maybe they do the advice of rights differently. They do the attorney appointments differently. They set future dates in a different way. So I might be saying, well, we're going to give you a future date. Oh, nope, we're not going to give you a future date because they don't do that here. So,
interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's just one example. I mean, there are all kinds of hearings that have different rules and procedures.
So before Alana asks, because we've got about 4 minutes left before she asks about what keeps you in Astoria.
Yes.
Because that's always her wrap-up question. I want one. If there's a teenage girl, a high school girl listening right now, what advice, if she has this notion of maybe I want to be a lawyer, or maybe I want to be a judge, what should she be doing right now? What would you tell that that kid?
Well, if she wants to practice law in Oregon, I would suggest she go to law school in Oregon, because you can make contacts that will last your entire career. Go watch trials. I loved it when people came and watched court. I think the attorneys perform better, and it's just fun to have people there listening and watching. So that's something that I did a lot of in Eugene, and I think it would be good if there's someone here who's interested. Go watch, see what you think. Volunteer for the court. I met a woman, at the judicial conference in October who came up to me and said, oh, I just want to introduce myself. I'm a judge in Lane County, and I volunteered in the DA's office in Clatsop County and watched you on the bench. And I just thought that was so cool.
Oh, how neat. How did she remember how many years it had been?
Yes, she did. Her name's Erin Fennerty. She grew up here.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So there's a nice young woman.
There
who,
it is.
Yeah, went yes. and became another judge. Mm-hmm. So what is it, as Mac alluded, what is it that keeps you here on the North Oregon coast?
I love Astoria. I can't imagine anywhere I'd like to live more than I like living here. Plus, my husband's here. Both of my daughters live in Astoria now. My two grandchildren live in Astoria, just 2.5 blocks from my house.
Oh, so how nice.
It's been wonderful. So that keeps me here.
What kind of activities do you like to do with family or without family?
Well, I stay very busy, but I like to bake. It's a little difficult because I don't like to eat what I bake, but I like to bake and read. I'm doing a reading challenge of five books a month, and I do jazzercise twice a week. I've taken a little break, but I'm going back to it on Thursday. I'm learning to play pickleball.
How fun.
Yeah.
You're part of AAUW.
I'm not, actually.
Oh, you're not. You're just going to be a guest.
Yes.
She's a guest speaker.
Next
she
week.
She could be a part of could. AAUW, which gonna, is American Association
okay.
of University Women. I'm a member, but I don't go. How's that for a plug?
Yeah.
They'll take your money, but you don't have to go to the meetings.
Oh, well, that sounds perfect.
It's a good cause. But yes, but you and some other women are going to be the speakers at an event.
Judge McIntosh and Judge Matthias.
Yes, see all the...
Yes.
I love it. Coming up soon.
Next week.
So in 30 seconds, what's your favorite memory of your time as a judge? If you have any specific... Like, hey, this was the best day, or this case was just the most amazing thing to be a witness to.
The most amazing part was the people. The people were the most amazing part. My court staff, the lawyers, the jurors. I loved interacting with jurors, witnesses. A lot of the defendants I got to know very well. The repeat offenders. We're quite good friends now. So really the people made the job so interesting.
Oh, well, you, like I said at the beginning, I know you inspired at least a little group of Girl Scouts, and I'm sure over 25 plus years, there are hundreds of others.
So thank you for your service, for sure, and continued service.
All right. Thanks for listening. Go make some history. We will catch you next week.
Thank you for joining us for an adventure in history. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.